Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Ron, let's go right back out to the Hall and Capitas fan hotline. One of my favorite guys on the NHL beat when I was working it, and still today, Arthur Staple of The Athletic. Arthur, how are you today?
I'm good, fellas. How you doing?
We're doing well. We're wondering if hockey's actually going to happen. You know, we've had a couple people on here the last few days, and the thoughts have ranged from not just will it happen, like will it start, but will a Stanley Cup eventually be awarded? We've had people say, I think Ken Campbell said 50-50, and some other people way more optimistic. Do you think the league can pull this off to the point where they actually award the cup at some point?
I think they can. I think a lot has to be worked out before they can even get underway. And I understand why they're so cautious and vague with the timeline right now, because there are a lot of things that have to be worked out, whether it's, quarantining players away from their families for what could be a couple of months once they get the playoff tournament started, to testing procedures, to all the other details. You know, I think it's a lot like how we all think about breaking our own lockdown, about who we include in our own circle. Once you start to get to more than a few people, it makes your head spin a little bit. So I can only imagine what they're dealing with. So a lot has to be worked out. A lot has to be negotiated, I think, between the Players Association and the league. The teams all have their input. So it's a big undertaking. But I think if they can get to the training camps sometime in the beginning of July, and the players understand that to make this happen, it's going to have to be a pretty tight lockdown once they get started. If they're willing to swallow that, I imagine they can get it started and get it finished, as long as there's kind of minimal travel and everyone embraces the idea of games being played with no fans in the building and kind of a very different environment about watching players play playoff hockey, which is usually the most intense and the most fan excitement part of the season.
Arthur, we're hoping you can clarify something for us, because Joe and I have had a hard time with this. We don't quite get how this the top four seeds are going to have a little tournament themselves. What is that going to determine? Does that mean like whoever does the best in that, it just totally wipes out what happened in the regular season? How does that work?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, Ron. But I suspect that they will take some of the standings of the four teams, what point totals they finish with, and then, you know, kind of wait the round robin a little bit to see if a team could move up from where they were initially slotted. I can imagine that's the only way it could work. It really would seem to be odd if the Bruins, who have been dominating the league all year, come back and lose those three games and suddenly they're the four seed and they've got to play whether it's Pittsburgh or Montreal in that next round, or whoever, if they decide to reseed. I just think there's still some details that need working out, and that's definitely one of them. And I sort of feel like, if you're looking for teams that are the most screwed, if you will, by this format, it's probably those top teams in each conference, and certainly teams like Boston and Tampa, who really were very clearly one and two in the league for a long, long time. I mean, it's not a ton more unfair than the prospect of those two teams playing each other in the second round, but definitely not knowing how everyone's going to get restarted with months away from the ice and then it's a training camp, and who knows how intense that can be with all the uncertainty around every city that all the teams are in, and then you suddenly get to this different environment with some playoffs, you don't know how teams are going to react. So it will be interesting to see, especially the teams that have that extra week or so before the competitive stuff begins.
Was 24 teams a fair way to go in your mind, Arthur?
I mean, fair to me is it feels like it left the station a long, long time ago. You know, I think they're trying to be as inclusive as they can. You know, they're trying to be as financially responsible to their shareholders, all the owners as they can by including teams like Montreal and Chicago and the Rangers that are big market teams that will draw good audiences. You know, the team that I cover has a dedicated fan base, but they don't always turn out to watch on TV. Maybe it'll be different this time around, but I imagine that that an Islanders Florida series in that qualifying round is not exactly gonna bring the eyeballs like it like a Pittsburgh Montreal series would or a Rangers series would. So I understand where the league's coming from. They maybe could have done 20, and maybe that would have been a little bit better because those, you know, two extra teams in each conference, maybe a little bit closer to the cut line. But I think, you know, you look at the Islanders matchup with Florida, you know, Florida was only a point behind where the Islanders were. There was, you know, they had played one extra game, but really it's kind of a coin flip for those teams in Florida's 10th in the conference. So it is, I think, okay to include some teams that might have been able to make a run over those last 3 weeks. I think when you expand it out to teams that were, you know, pretty sure that they weren't going to make it, like Montreal, like Chicago, I can understand the beef of Penguins fans or maybe Oilers fans over in the other conference that they felt pretty good about their position, and now they're going to have to play a team that might, you know, might surprise everybody because they have a couple of key good players. But, you know, like I said, this is the playoff format since 1980, I think, has changed about 10 times. So we don't really know what's fair and what's unfair, and there's always going to be somebody who's upset.
Arthur, I guess it's still to be determined if all these rounds other than the play-in round are going to be best of seven. Is that correct?
That, to me, seems kind of like it's out of really the control of the league and the Players Association. It's really just about how much time they can have. And, you know, if things around the country or at least in the hub cities are looking okay as far as the number of tests they can do and the amount of time that the teams can spend there, maybe they can go straight to best of seven once they start the so-called proper playoffs after the qualifying round. But I imagine that it's really the environment that the teams are going to be in, and then the environment, you know, North America is going to be in to really determine that. And I don't think it's going to devalue it too much. If you have a bunch of teams that have already played a best of five, they're used to it. It would really be, you know, for the teams that get the byes, it'll be their first real playoff round. So if it's best of five, it's not that big a deal. It's funny that we've all been delving into nostalgia writing or watching on TV, and I've been chatting with a lot of the dynasty guys from the Islanders in the 80s and looking back at some of those clips of best of three, best of five. Nobody looks back at those and says they didn't mean as much. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a time to throw back to the old days of those first rounds were a lot more competitive, I think, because they were shorter and the pressure was a little higher on the better teams. And if you get hot, you never know where you can end up.
Arthur Staple covers the Islanders for The Athletic. We were batting around this topic earlier, Arthur, which is, do you think as sports writers, and all of us have been doing this a long time, do you think you're going to be in a press box covering any of this? When's the next time you think you'll ever be in a locker room interviewing a player, if ever?
Maybe when somebody hands me a signed picture or something for my retirement in 20 years. I think, you know, it's a little sad that we've had lots of time to think about it, and we all have lots of friends in the business. I've talked to my friends who cover other sports. I think we're not going to see the inside of a locker room maybe for a long, long time, and maybe never again. I think that world has changed permanently. You know, even when there's a vaccine and maybe things are a little bit more back to normal, if we can ever envision that time, I don't think that's a luxury that teams can afford to have an uncontrolled group of people in and out of their locker room. And I think we all know from being in locker rooms, they are vectors for disease. If you've ever covered a team that has where the flu's going around, you know you're going to get it or have to avoid it. And this is obviously far, far worse. So It's hard to think about doing the job in such a different way. I mean, it's during the pause, it's actually been kind of refreshing. Everybody's on lockdown. It's easier to call guys at home, and they're dying to talk about hockey. But once we get back started, I think it's going to be a lot of post-game Zoom press conferences, especially for this tournament. I can't see a way that they allow even broadcasters in the building, from what I understand. I think the national broadcasts are going to be done off of monitors and studios in Canada and in the States. So, I think they have to keep those quarantine circles as tight as possible. And we in the media are not kind of part of that plan right now. And hopefully for next season, there'll be a chance to be in buildings, but I think it's going to look a lot different, and it's going to be take a lot of foresight and a lot of creativity on a lot of our parts as beat reporters to figure out how to navigate this new world.
You know, Arthur, I couldn't agree with you more. And I know the pandemic obviously is the number one reason you have to be safe. But my personal feeling is they've been looking for an excuse to get rid of us, if you will, for a long time, that they don't really want us in the locker room. I truly believe that. I don't know if you share that feeling. It just seems to me that this is a nice little easy way to take care of that forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think hockey is a little different than some of the other sports. It's, I've definitely spent my time in baseball and football and basketball locker rooms, and I feel like baseball in particular, there's a definite push-pull. Reporters have traditionally spent a lot of time in baseball clubhouses pre- and post-game, and it kind of has that more meandering quality that creates a little more friction. For hockey, I feel like, it's particularly the team that I've covered for the last decade. There's not a lot of media in there. It's a good way to get to know people and kind of, grow a base of stories for the future when you're just shooting the bull with guys. And that's something that doesn't happen a ton in some of those other locker rooms because they're a little bit either more tightly regulated or guys have places that they can hide. So, I don't know that it's going to change everything permanently as far as some of the other sports go. I think hockey, it's just, like I said, it's going to be having to figure out a different way to do things and do a little bit more behind the scenes work rather than the face-to-face stuff.
Arthur, when I look at this prospective tournament here and I think of a team that I would want to avoid early, I think of the Islanders, especially in a best of five, just because they're still stingy. I think there were six in goals against. They got two good goalies. They have Barry Trotz behind the bench. What do you think of the team you cover and their chances?
Well, I think you go back to the beginning of the season, and that's the closest approximation you can have to what's going to be this restart with months off. And the Islanders have started the season. They had a 15-0-2 run at the beginning of this season to go. I think they were 16-3-1 through their first 20. So, yeah, it's that Barry Trotz is going to have them well prepared going into this. Everybody's healthy. So when the Islanders really hadn't been very healthy all year long and missing some key guys that are not well-known names around the league, but having Jesus Ezekis out for a month, Cal Clutterbuck out for almost 3 months, and Adam Pellick, who they thought was gone for the year when he ruptured his Achilles back in January, he'll be back, it sounds like. So I think every team at full strength thinks that they have a chance, and I agree with you. The Islanders, their commitment to defense in 2018-19 was the biggest reason that they were able to withstand the loss of John Tavares and sweep the Penguins in the first round, and just because they couldn't put the puck in the net against Carolina was the reason they went out so quickly in the second round. This is essentially the same team, a different face in net and Semyon Varlamov. But if they can get back to playing that stingy style that they really seemed to perfect last season, they are going to be tough to beat. And especially starting off against a Florida team that has a very high-powered offense but hasn't been very good playing defense. The Islanders, I think, as Penguins fans can attest, very opportunistic and very, very tough to get the lead away from.
Now, Arthur, you talk about every team that's is going to be probably healthy. Pittsburgh's going to get back Jake Guentzel, obviously, who's their best goal scorer. But there's a lot of excitement here. Big story in our paper today about Pittsburgh making a big push to be one of the hub cities. Do you think that is a reasonable premise from what you know about PPG Paints Arena in Pittsburgh?
I mean, it seems to make sense when you think of a Pittsburgh or a Columbus. They're not super crowded downtowns like we have a little bit more here in the Northeast. A lot of hotel space, especially now, and access to ice. It's an interesting possibility. I'm not too concerned about the hub cities. It's interesting to me to see places like Edmonton that are sort of openly competing, I guess, or vying to be a hub city. I don't really know how, if I was a resident of that city, how I'd feel about bringing in, 600 or so NHL people and the staffs and having to have a, daily tests in the hundreds and thousands. I'd genuinely be a little concerned about what that meant for testing for frontline workers and store employees and things like that. But it's interesting to me to see where they're going to put the teams and whether that even matters very much. I'm sure that they're, it seems that they're pretty set on not having teams playing in their home city. So if Pittsburgh's one of them, I would imagine they're going to be hosting the Western teams. And I wonder how all those guys from out West would feel about having that travel and playing on East Coast time, even though it's been a long time since anybody played, and how strange it would be that, say, Pittsburgh was hosting the Western Conference and Edmonton was hosting the Eastern Conference. It would seem to be that's adding a lot of travel and a lot of headaches to a situation that needs fewer headaches. So I'm curious to see how they resolve all of it.
Arthur, we'll leave you with this one. How has the season gone, or how did it go? It's pretty much over now, at least the regular season, for our old friend Derek Brassard.
It was okay. Started off a little rough, and I think ended up playing mostly wing instead of being the number three center that they had ideally envisioned him as when they brought him in on a very cheap deal at the beginning of the year. And, he's a very, I think his time in Pittsburgh had some ups and downs, but he's a very adaptable guy, and he's willing to do whatever it takes. I think, coming off a very difficult 18-19 where, he played on three teams and didn't seem to really find a home with any of them. I think he was eager to prove himself that he was still an NHLer, and he definitely did that. He's a guy who's willing to work hard, and I think the fact that it didn't quite work out with him as the number three center had a lot to do with who they were putting on his wings rather than what he was doing really within the scheme that Barry Trotz put together. So I think he made some good contributions. He bounced around the lineup a little bit. I think when they got JG Pageau at the trade deadline, that kind of cemented Brassard as a wing, and we'll see where he slots in if they're able to restart. I would imagine it would be on Pageau's right or left side, and I think maybe taking some of those responsibilities away helped ease his mind a little bit about fitting into that system that was a little bit different. I think a little bit more tightly controlled than some of the other places he'd played and some of the places he'd thrived, whether it was Ottawa or with the Rangers back in the day.
Arthur, thanks for taking all this time, man. We appreciate you coming on, and who knows, maybe it'll be Penguins Islanders at some point. You never know. Take care, man.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot. Anytime. Stay safe.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.